So where we stopped before was when you have someone in a meeting and all of a sudden you see a reaction in your meeting. There's going to be all kinds of reactions. There's going to be a stoic. There's going to be someone that's going to start crying. Somebody might get up and run out. There's all kinds of things. Sometimes it's a shutdown, what they call a shutdown. It's just, you know, just boom, not going to, I'm done. You said something wrong. It just triggered them just wrong. And they're gone. So what do you do? What do you do? I'm going to give you some grounding tips. I'm going to call them GT, GT1, GT2, GT3, and I might even throw another one in there. This one right here is called the water bottle. I drew a line around it here. This gal is in an interrogation room, and you'll see the water bottle. Now, this works, and you might find this to be helpful if you haven't heard about it, when you're in a situation where you have people that are agitated. Okay, so what happens is you have this thing called, I'm not going to use the technical term right now. I'll give it to you in the next slide, but just the general term, it would be fight or flight. They're in this SMS, I think is what they call it. Fight or flight mode. So they're in there agitated. They're maybe antagonistic, maybe aggressive, right? And so what do you do? Well, if you're going to interrogate them, if you're a police officer, you've handcuffed them, you brought them in the squad car, you throw them in this room, and they're, you know, this is a jail cell, and you know, they're upset, they're irritated, worried. What do you do? And every one of the TV shows, you ever see sitting on the table? There's a water bottle sitting there. What is that about? That's not just a random kindness. That is by design. Because what happens is, you give somebody a water bottle, what happens is they open the lid and they start drinking. Immediately, their body switches. So there is a switch in your body. You're in fight or flight. When you start drinking involuntarily, your body switches to rest and digestion. You immediately calm. You don't even know how. You don't know why. It just happens. When we're on a scene, we're in a big scene out in a car wreck, and there's someone up there. I got to get close. I got to find out. I got to see. It's my loved one. First thing you do, I tell officers all the time, keep water bottles in your trunk. Here, take a water bottle. Sit down here. Sit down. Immediately, rest and digestion. Immediately. It's amazing. Now watch this. This email right here I got from this guy. Has anybody here, you might have. Have you heard of Colonel Dave Grossman? Anybody heard of him? Dave, well, you have. You met him. But Grossman is a, he's a speaker for West Point. He travels, he speaks to, he teaches at West Point. He travels in these two books. If you're interested at all, this one particularly, I found very, very helpful on combat. Both of them are very good. And what he does in these books is talks about the effects of killing on the soldier who does the killing. When a soldier kills, what happens to him and how to process it? He deals with PTSD and all those kinds of things. Dave sent me this email. We were talking about some things, and I gave you some of it here. He says in this, I think the key during a debriefing is to always strive to de-link the memory from the emotional reaction. So how do you do that? If anyone starts to have stress in their voice or vasoconstriction, which is pale face or white patches on the face, have them stop and take a swig of water. This is a powerful tool that pulls the body from the sympathetic nervous system, fight or flight, to PSNS, which is parasympathetic nervous system, rest and digest. If something to drink is not available, breathing exercise is a good option as well. He said a friend of mine, a leading mental health provider for federal agents, this is a guy who works with the FBI, we talked about him, Grossman told me a little bit about him. But he said, this guy's, he's a provider for federal agents. He told me reusing the bottle water, the bottle of water, talking about the bottle of water. He said 6 years of college, 14 years of practice, and that stupid bottle of water is doing more good than anything I've done. It's important to distinguish SNS arousal from survivor guilt. Survival guilt is grieving, and most chaplains have good experience and skills in dealing with grieving. So, you know, that's a different thing. Grieving is a different thing. But this fight or flight, this agitation, I've talked to police officers about, you know, you got somebody coming in to, you know, some of the guys standing, you know, in the courthouse or whatever. Someone's agitated. Give them a bottle. Hey, what can I do for you? Here, have a bottle of water. And it looks like you just care about them, but they take that drink of water and immediately pulls them right in PS&S.
That can help them
with
bus sleep.
It's, yes, 100%. It'll help kids. I mean, it's automatic. You don't even think about it. And I'm going to tell you something, that water bottle thing, I've used it so much. And so that's one I mentioned in my first class yesterday. That's why we made a cart in the ER. Remember me saying that? And we filled it with water bottles. Why? Because when they're in the middle of a, gotta go from here to here to here to here, that just gives them a mental break and it pulls them right out of the fight or flight, relaxes them. It helps them with processing. It helps them start, it rests them and relaxes them and helps them start focusing and concentrating. And they aren't losing their minds. It's shocking how that happens. I also, it's another reason why I give Snickers candy bars out to nurses. Another reason why I do it, because when they eat them, they're stressed. It happens all the time. I walked in the hospital hallways and they say to me, you're our favorite person. And like, all I do is give them a chocolate bar and I'm out of their lives. And it's just a minute to just stop and eat something and they begin to rest and digest. And they're like, I can handle this now.
How long do they stay in that state?
Usually it'll switch them, and you can help them then mentally. That's what I'm talking about. When we're doing a debrief, what happens is you're trying to get them to, you were asking me a question earlier about how do you get, at when you're assessing the situation, right? How do you get them to convince, how do you convince them, right? That and this is one of the ways. How do you get them to connect with you? How do you, a bottle of water is one of the tools. Okay? Pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Okay? Sequencing. Pardon the weird looking picture. But what happened may not be what you remember. Neil, you and I were talking about this in the hallway. The brain sometimes makes up stories based on random facts in the data bank. Remember me doing the lion and the crown and the chessboard and the poor, and you know, the dolphin and the hat and all that stuff. Okay. So sequencing is a tool. We've talked about it a little bit, a couple times, but we'll start with this first before we get to here. The brain makes up stories based on random facts in the data bank. So think about it. Think about your brain as a blender when you're stressed. It takes everything and mixes it up and spits it back in a different form. That means the different form that comes out and the original what happened are two different things. Have you ever listened to somebody tell a story and then you've heard it again and you've heard it again? Tristan, don't say anything. And then you've heard it again and then you've heard it again, and every time it has a little different detail, a little different twist to it. Some friends of mine were burning a pastor that they knew that every year he would come to their conference, and he told the story about Big Bertha. Every year he told the story of Big Bertha. It was a girl in the school or the church or something. It was a teacher or somebody, and he would give her age and he would give her size and he'd give what she was wearing and the color of her hair every year. Well, they went back, Brother Neil, through all of the times he had told that story, about 20 times in their church, and they put it together in clips. Big Bertha weighed 225. She weighed 307. Big Bertha weighed 420. Every year, it had a different fact. And they played it back to him. It was the greatest burn I'd ever heard. Because, you know, he was making up stuff as he was going. And wow, how fun is that? But the point is simply this. When you're retelling the story, it changes. Why? Because your brain is a blender. And it mixes all those little facts up and spits it back out in the way it wants to spit it out at that moment. Now you're feeling. So when you're dealing with stress and trauma, understand the PTSD, some of it has to do with the fact that it's all jumbled up in your head. So one of the best things you can do is sequence, what I call sequencing. Sit down, like I told you before, take a piece of paper and an X and go through the circumstance, go through what happened. Okay, so what did you do? Well, I was the first responder on the scene, mark an X. Okay, so you were the first responder, spell it back, first responder on the scene, right? It's one of the other things we talked about. Repeat back, right? You're listening, right? X on the paper. Okay, so when you got there, what did you do? Every detail is important. Well, I opened the door. Okay, so you opened the door. What did you see? Well, she was there behind the steering wheel. Steering wheel was impaled to her. What did you do? Well, I spoke to her and I told her help was on the way. So X3, help is on the way. So I opened the door. I saw her. I talked to her. I spoke to her. I told her help is on the way, right? Then what did you do? Well, when the ambulance got there, I helped them get her out of the car. So boom, boom, got her on the stretcher. Okay, X, the next X. Okay, then what did you do? Well, we carried her and put her in the ambulance. Very good. What'd you do then? Well, I helped clean up the scene. Okay, X's. Okay, so then he said, but she said, you know, she said help me, and there wasn't anything I could do to help her. Yeah, but what did you do? X1. What did you do? Let's go. What was this X represent? And he says, this is what it was. What did this X represent? This is what it was. What did this X represent? And this is what it was. And you go over that and over again. Several years ago, I had a young man, a fireman. He was 19. His dad was a fireman. His grandpa was a fireman. And he was on the force. And he was ready to quit. And what had happened, he'd come on a scene. A car had crossed a railroad track. The railroad track had hit the car. And I don't know if you've ever heard of the phrase, it knocked your socks off. But literally, because of the force of the train hitting the car, the guy that was driving the car, his shoes and socks came off because of the force. I don't know how that works, but it does, right? And so he's laying there, and the back of his head is gone. And so my young friend was holding him, and he picked his head up and put his fingers right on his brain. And he said the guy's looking there. He couldn't talk because the motor responses to his voice and everything was all cut off, and the guy was still alive. And he laid there and he said, he looked up into my eyes and I could see in his eyes, help me, help me, help me. And he said, I couldn't do anything. And so what did we do? Here's what, tell me class, real quickly, tell me, what would you say? Give me something you would say.
To the guy?
Mm-hmm. Like, to the guy that was helping, that said he couldn't do anything. What did he do?
He was there to comfort.
Yeah.
He held him. Held his brains in. He did. He literally did.
Sure.
What else did he do?
He was there.
He was there. That guy didn't have anybody else. He was there to help him. What else did he do?
Met him eyeball to eyeball.
He met him eyeball to eyeball. He kept him safe from any further harm until someone else could get there. He knew he was going to die. What else could he do? Yeah. Okay, here's another scene that happened. This happened a few months ago. Right now what I'm going to tell you is my own personal processing because I'm still struggling with it. Okay? And so sometimes I get the opportunity to tell these stories in class and it helps me get it out. Okay? But I'm sitting there, 16-year-old in the hospital. Baby was born prematurely. The shape of the baby was not quite developed. Skin was not quite developed, still translucent. The baby was going to die. Baby was still alive. 16-year-old dad sitting there holding the baby, and I'm sitting beside him, and we literally are holding the baby until it dies. And there's zero we can do. Now, for me, I'm mad. I'm like, what is wrong with our hospital? I've been in Riley Children's Hospital. I've seen babies in the exact same situation, and there's plugs and all kinds of things. They can hook this baby up, and they can bring this baby. But here at this hospital, there is nothing they can do. And they can't put it in a transport and send them. They got helicopters, but they put them in a transport. It's not going to make it. There's nothing they can do. There's not enough budget. There's not enough machines. There's nothing. And so you're like, okay, so tell me, class, what would you say to me? I'm sitting there. I have my arm around the boy. I pray with him. I cry with him. My heart breaks. Tell me.
You were there.
Your heart is now knit with them.
Well, you got the phone call.
What do you feel right now? Yeah, you were there.
Mm-hmm.
I would affirm that, like, this is just a bad situation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry for what you're going through.
Mm-hmm.
You normalized his emotions, too. You helped him realize that the despair you feel, I also feel.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he wasn't alone.
You weep with him. That's the thing. You
should
empathy. Mm-hmm. That's all you could have done is.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't help the baby, but you could help him, and you were with him.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the most important thing you did.
Mm-hmm.
Because he couldn't fix the baby, neither could you.
Are you guys feeling what I am expressing? So this is what you're doing, and I just gave you a real life scenario. Here I am, a guy helping the nurses and doctors. I personally am a pastor. I'm a professional, as I said before. I've done this hundreds of times, as you can tell by the stories I tell you, which are all very, very 100% accurate. I've sat with directors, with people who with botched abortions. We had a baby. We had a woman that delivered the baby halfway. She was numb. She had no feeling. She was high. And the baby hung out of her halfway, and the nurses had to witness that, tried to deliver the baby, but the woman was not cooperating. And she got up and was walking around with the baby hanging out of her. And I went up, they called me to come help. That's the kind of stuff you get into when you do this. So I'm just telling you, when you deal with these kinds of traumas, you also, and we'll talk about it later, you also need help. But back to this. Sequencing is one of the things that help you. So sequencing, and remember, when it comes to facts, remember something. This is really critical. I'm going to underscore this. When it comes to facts, remember, you got to beat the lion and the dolphin. Beat them, because they're messing around with my head. Okay? They're messing around with the person's head. All this stuff, it's jumbling up and coming out in different forms and fashions. In other words, I see dreams, I see faces. You say to me, I've seen dead faces, and I immediately see six or eight come to me just like that. I say it, immediately see those things. Say, and I'm just a debriefer. And you know, I've been a chaplain. So those are things that you got to think about, right? So you've got to organize it. That old lion and dolphin in your head, they're doing crazy things. You know, once in a while, they'll play soccer instead of chess. Hmm? And so you've got to, so in sequencing, remember, this is what happened, this is what happened, this is what happened, this is what happened, and go through the story and then reiterate. This is the story, this is the story. This is what you did, 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 this is, and there's nothing else you could have done. Yes, sir.
When you make the X's, are you just leaving them as X's,
mm-hmm.
or are you labeling?
You can label them. I've done X's because just my aversion, my personal aversion, this is me, to writing down anything, any record. Okay. That's my personal aversion. So that's why I put an X, because I don't want anybody to think I'm writing notes and I'm going to.
I assume you were writing something.
No, I put X's. Thanks for bringing that out. Yeah. I just exit. And then also, he goes back and, of course, he's putting to that X. He's putting in his own mind an image and a thought, and then he's locking that in his brain. Okay? Make sense? Good questions. Very good questions. PTSD is often linked to guilt. The first responder may feel like they didn't do enough. And so what you have to do is show them that they followed their training. They did what they had to do, what they were trained to do, what they were supposed to do. This is what we do. There are protocols, and this is one of the things you'll get in the medical field, you'll learn this. There are protocols, and those protocols are there for a reason. Because you go into automation. And oftentimes you act without thinking. Because this is what we do, this is what we do, this is what we do, this is what we do. Grab this cart, grab this cart, grab this cart. You guys get over here, you guys get over here. In a bad situation where there's a birthing gone wrong, and then they have to take in the middle of the birthing process, we're losing mom and baby, and they have to take them into immediate C-section surgery to save them both. That is a horrific thing. And by the way, I don't know if you knew this, but the chainsaw was invented for C-sections. Did you know that? Yeah, it was. That was the original purpose of it. And we found out, oh, this will cut wood too. Who knew? Yeah, that's a fun one. So I put that in my newsletter, and the nurses love that one. They're all going, what? Yeah, that's pretty fun. Okay, so I mentioned use a visual aid pencil. Visual aid helps. Go over the facts. Mark an X for every action the first responder took. No details too small. As the discussion unfolds, go back to each point several times, showing him or her what action was taken. This validates that he or she did everything possible. Now, I got one more GT number three, but I'm going to insert something I don't have on my PowerPoint slide. I've discovered that music is an unbelievable help. So music, and when I say music, I know in our circles, I'm just going to be honest with you. In our circles, there's a lot of people that get really sticky about music. And they'll say, you can only listen to this kind of music or that kind of music or this kind of music. Let's just put all that aside for right now and let's realize something. So you and I were talking about this earlier, about the sound. Okay, we talked about, just briefly, I mentioned it. Submolecular level, everything is made up of vibrations. Everything is made up of vibrations and frequencies. Everything has a frequency. This has a frequency. This has a frequency. Every single thing is made up at its submolecular level of frequencies and sound vibrations. That means that music, how music appeals to you, how it speaks to you, speaks to you at your submolecular level. I mean, when we talk about your heart and soul, I mean, it goes into the very core of your makeup. A merry heart doeth good like a medicine. Brad Pitt said that he grew up apostolic, and he left the apostolic church when he went to a rock concert and in a mosh pit felt the same thing that he thought was the Holy Spirit in the apostolic church. So he was listening to a rock and roll concert, and the rock and roll concert did the same thing to his body that the apostolic praise and worship service did. But what happened? Frequency clicked in the frequency in his body, and it didn't matter the song. The sound frequency, whatever it was, hit him at a submolecular level, and he literally felt the same thing. I'm just saying, that's science. You're going to find that we did a test. Listen to this. We did a test on plants. One of the young men in our school did a test on plants. And we found out that plants respond to music. Do you know different plants respond to different kinds of music? So this one particular plant, he subjected it to classical music, to gospel music, to southern gospel, and heavy metal. Did you know heavy metal is what made it grow?
Trying to get away.
Probably. And my point is simply this, and this is not a class on music. Please forgive me for that. I'm just telling you how it is. the sounds in the heavy metal music, somehow the frequencies that they hit with their guitars and one of the riffs and whatever, the sounds in it connected to the submolecular level of the plants and help them grow. Have you heard of people talking to plants, those plants growing? Okay, it happens. It happens. People think, well, that's hokey. No, no, no. Remember, everything is vibration. Everything is vibrance, vibrations. Everything is made up of frequencies, sound. And the Bible says, by the word of the Lord were the heavens made. He spoke and it was done. He commanded it, stood fast. He said, in the beginning was the word was with God, the word was God, the same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by him, and without him was not anything made that was made. But what? The word. The word was what made everything. Give science enough time, it'll catch up with the Bible.
True. I see it's my eye. I've had nurses say that's useless.
No, it's
I said you have a dementia person who cannot remember anything.
Mm-hmm.
Start singing Amazing Grace because that's what they
want. So we have a lady in our church that belongs to a hospice choir, and there's a group of our people in our area that have put together a choir, and they go house to house, hospice patient to hospice patient, and sing. My mother had dementia before she died, and there were days I would walk in and she did not know who I was. She didn't remember who my dad was. And completely frustrated and worried and afraid. I would go into the nursing home every week and I would go down to the dining hall and get sit down at the piano and play on the piano and sing to her. And she would sing and she would smile and she would laugh. And we'd bring her to church and our nursing home, which is now our school, we bought the nursing home and turned it into a school, but she used to be in that nursing home. And it was a block away from our church, and I'd go down on Sunday mornings and get her in her wheelchair and wheel her to church. And she'd come sit in there, and she loved to hear me preach, even though she couldn't remember who I was sometimes. But she would sit there with her dementia. We'd start singing hymns, and bless God, it spoke to her soul. And she would sing, and you could see her. She'd remember every word. Service is over. She didn't know where she was. She was fretting and worried and concerned and thought she was amongst strangers. But when the song of the Lord began, the Lord sent ambushments. There's a Bible verse about that. The other grounding technique is faith. What do I mean by that? As a person of faith, remember something. The stuff that I'm giving you is not hokey. This is not stupid stuff. This is not crazy stuff. The Bible gives many examples of this kind of help. Jesus himself used different types of techniques to help people deal with their trauma. Can I remind you of Jonah? Just think about Jonah for a minute. Think about Jonah. He got swallowed by a freaking whale. A whale. I mean, really, think about it. This guy is scared out of his mind. He's sliding down this tube, he lands in a pile of cod liver oil and seaweed. The Bible says his seaweed was wrapped around his head. Have you ever thought you were drowning? Have you ever been in a situation where you felt like you were drowning and couldn't get out? I mean, think about this guy. He's in this whale stomach after his buddies had thrown him overboard. He knew he was running from God. Now think about this. Then he gets thrown up. Acid has burnt his skin. Probably he will not have a tan. This is a brown-skinned guy who now is white. And he walks into Nineveh. God said, here you go. Go on into Nineveh. And he gets up off the beach. He hasn't been sunning himself. Doesn't look like he's been to the beach. And he goes into town and he begins to preach to these people he hates. And they respond. And what does he do? He goes out and sits along in Jonah 4, and he says, God, what's going on here? I knew you were going to. And he sounds like an old grouch, and we're like, what is wrong with you? Independent Fundamental Baptists haven't existed yet. Come on. That we're not even there yet. And so he's sitting there on the side, and he's groaning, God, you should have killed him. What's wrong? And God makes a gourd grow up and doesn't say anything. And then there's shadows over Jonah. Jonah sits there in the shade, and he's relaxing and resting. And all of a sudden, you know, he's talking to God, and then God kills the gourd. Okay, time to get up. You got some rest. Time to go now. And they're having this conversation, and you don't find God getting mad at Jonah. He just talks to him and says, are you well to be angry? Really? Should you be? and he's debriefing him after the trauma. Look at Peter. Here's this one. This story. So when they dined, Jesus saith to Simon, Peter, Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me more than these? Huh? Look at these yellow lines. Lovest thou me? Three times. Why? Peter thought, oh boy, I'm sunk. He said, Lord, I will go thee with thee even to death. He draws his sword. Jesus said, put that away. Right? And Peter's like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to. And then a few minutes later, he's cursing, denying Christ. Think about it. And then he goes fishing. He said, I'm done with this. And Jesus said, come here, let's eat some fish. There's something to eat. Right? And then he said, do you love me? Three times. Remember the X's? Three times. Do you love me? Why? Peter's like, you know I love you. Jesus knew that. What he was trying to do was help his mind process the fact that, yes, Peter, you're not stupid. You're not crazy. You just saw someone you loved very much, brutally crucified, died, come back to life, and you are completely out of your wig. So Peter, after the third time, remembered, Lord, you know I love you. And in each case, Jesus gave him five things. See the red lines? Jesus gave him five things to do. Feed my lambs, the children. Feed my sheep. Follow me. Same thing, simple. Nothing big. Don't go out and do 10 different things, but you can feed and you can follow. That's all you have to worry about right now. Feed and follow. And sometimes when we get in ministry and we get so overwhelmed, like I don't even know what to do. Well, you keep feeding and keep following, right? So anyway, that's another sermon, right? You can't keep a preacher from preaching just a little bit. All right. Warning, proceed with caution. Referral criteria. If someone is suicidal, extreme PTSD symptoms, or substance misuse, be careful here.
We have what we call crisis.
Right.
And they'll come out and evaluate.
Right. And so proceed with caution with these things. Remember, you are considered a specialist, but you are not the end all. You don't have everything. You don't know everything. Be careful diagnosing.
All your scope of competence.
Yeah. I have three doctor's degrees. And so, but I'm very careful at the hospital not to use them at the hospital. I'm Dan at the hospital. I'm not Dr. Dan. There's reason for that.
Trouble going out of your scope of competence.
Let's talk about post-debrief follow-up. Check-in times and providing coping tools. So check-in times are something that early on I did not know about. I did not realize. But after you do a debrief, you should check back and make sure everybody's okay. And truthfully, that helps you build rapport. When we had a shooting at our high school, in the cafeteria, one of the teachers took down the, shooter and took the gun out of his hand. He was firing in the cafeteria. She tackled him, pulled the gun up as it was firing into the ceiling, grabbed the gun. She was dealing with trauma, dealt with it quite a bit. She and I have developed a relationship in our town. She's been to my home. In my kitchen, standing in my kitchen, leaning against my sink, talking to my wife and I. She's had ongoing, she created some support groups in our town. And every time she does, has a support group, she calls me. We're online friends now. Constant checkup with her. Okay? Check-in times, that's a good thing. Provide coping tools. Some of the tools that I use, I already mentioned music. Music is one of them. Encourage music. talk. Sometimes you can talk about a song that might mean something to you or something, and depends on the crowd you're talking to. I get criticism a lot for this, but I think anytime the name of Jesus is lifted up, it's a good thing. I was pretty happy when I saw a bunch of Arabs dancing, singing the YMCA the other day when Trump landed. I was thinking, they don't even know it. They're singing Young Men's Christian Association, Arabs, Muslim Arabs. They're singing YMCA. It's Christian Association. Lifting up the name of Christ, they don't even know it. But I think anytime the name of Christ gets lifted up, I think it's a good thing. There's current stuff going on. You've heard of Jelly Roll. Some of those guys that have, you know, I know I'm not going to invite him to my church. I trust me. But there are people. I have hosted a couple MMA fights. But anyway, that's another story. There are people like that that connect at a different level. They're not somebody you would listen to, but they've got a message that can connect to someone. Think about that outside the box. Okay. I'm just wanting you to think about that. You may disagree with me. That's fine. It's okay for you to be wrong. But as I heard a little earlier, that was a line I heard somebody say upstairs. I thought, I'm going to steal that. That was great. But no, honestly, you may completely disagree. And there's a lot of theories and ideas about it. And that's fine. You do what you want to do. But think about this. Music is good for them. Coping tools, breathing exercises are really good. Breathing exercises are important. Breathing, a lot of times what happens is when we're stressed, we start breathing shallow. And so there's several different kinds of breathing techniques. Has anybody here used breathing techniques at all? Okay, so I don't need to go over that. You know what it is. But what happens is carbon builds up in the lungs. It starts giving you a pseudo heart chest pains. And you feel like it's heart. All it is you've slumped your shoulders. You're not breathing deep enough. So if you can get them to straighten up and you can get them to breathe deep almost every time, I'm going to say 99 and 9/10% of the time that I have a breathing exercise, people are laughing before we're done with it because oxygen has flooded their brain and the chest pain starts going away. Headaches start going away. Simple science. Mind-body techniques where we relax the body from the toes all the way to the head. Tell them to relax, sit quietly, close your eyes, think about your toes. Hope you didn't pain them today, guys. Relax them. Go with your, if I did it to you right now, brother, you'd fall asleep if we did this. Because you start relaxing and you think about things like the palms of your hands. Right now, I want you to think about this. Can you feel the palms of your hands? You don't think about it. Think about it. Focus on it. Feel it. Yeah. Isn't that weird? You don't think about it. If you're focused on it, you can think about it. Well, when you're relaxing yourself, you can, and that's a tool you can use to help them, a coping tool.
Like singing. On YouTube, as you're talking to them to get relaxed, that singing bowl actually.
Right. Things like that can happen too. There's a lot of techniques like that, but give them tools, do some research on it. Okay. Now, debrief for self-care. Let's talk about this real quickly here. Process your own experience. Peer support, warning signs of burnout. Don't forget, you've got the same problem because transference is a very real thing. You can take the trauma. Some of you guys here, I've seen times when I've talked to someone and told them about a trauma and they've literally been crying when I was done telling the story because it was so descriptive, they started feeling it. It happens a lot. I'll hold your thought because I got to keep moving real quick. I'm sorry. Physical signs. Think about this. This is one of your, I put up yield. I've got three sheets here I want to show you. Yield sign, physical signs. Exhaustion, fatigue, overwhelming tiredness, even after you sleep. Gastrointestinal disorders. You've heard of things like irritable bowel syndrome. Okay. Headaches, frequent tension headaches or migraines. Increased illness, lowered immunity, leading to frequent infections like colds or flu. You're always getting the flu. All insomnia, difficulty falling asleep or staying asleep. leading to chronic deep sleep deprivation. Like I said earlier, sleeping like a baby, waking up every 2 hours and crying. That's what that is. Loss of appetite, significant decrease in appetite and eating habits. Muscle pain, unexplained muscle aches and pains. A lot of times people will break out in rashes. When you start seeing these kind of physical signs, you're experiencing trauma. Pay attention to this. Emotional signs, anger or irritability. This is what causes problems in marriages. Feeling short-tempered, quick to frustration with coworkers, friends, family, oftentimes children. Pastors' kids, ministries' kids often feel the brunt of our PTSD. The family needs to understand, if you come home and you feel and you're irritated at them, and you bite their head off, stop and apologize and say, it's not you, I'm dealing with something else. Make sure they know it's not them, right? And maybe you don't even realize you're irritable, you're different, you're grouchy. Maybe you don't even realize it, and it's coming from stress. Anxiety, persistent feeling of tension, cynicism. Well, this won't work. Negativity, depersonalization, disconnecting from yourself and your surroundings, depression. A lot of pastors deal with depression. You'll hear a lot about that. Listlessness, a lack of energy or interest in daily activities. You don't care anymore. Apathy, hopelessness, a sense nothing matters, conditions won't improve. Loss of enjoyment, activities and hobbies once brought you joy, you don't care anymore. Lack of control, you thought you wanted to add there? Oh, okay. Feeling of having no influence over your work or your life. These are emotional signs. Behavioral signs, concentration issues. Anybody ever felt with that? Difficulty focusing on tasks at work or personal life. Decreased productivity, noticeable decline in your work output and quality. Hating your job, a strong aversion to your work and workplace, something you really liked at one point you don't like anymore. Increased isolation, withdrawal from social contacts and activities. People don't realize that. I was talking to brother here. I'm more of an introvert. I never used to be. I was always in the middle of the life of the party, in the middle of everything, partying, half laughing, telling jokes, always in the middle. And because of all of the trauma, I find myself like today, I walked out to the pond and sat down by myself. I was like, I feel myself, I'm just going to step away. You know, my wife, we come home on Sunday and we wash the fellowship off our hands and say, had enough peopling today, right? And we love people. We love them. But it's like after so much, you're like, be careful. Watch that. Know what it is. Increased isolation, a lack of motivation, struggling to start tasks or find the energy to complete them. I have 10 books I'm working on right now. Whew. You know how hard it is to do that? Sit down and do it. And it's like, because of all of the stuff, I'm like, oh, I got to do that. You know? A reduced efficacy, the feeling that your efforts do not matter or make a difference. It's like, he may even care. If I put this out, he may even read it. You know? Who do they care? What do they care? Right? So tools to help burnout. Here's tools to help avoid burnout. Take regular breaks. Breaks are important. Doesn't have to be a long break. You know, Thomas Edison invented the coffee break. They did not sleep nights. What they did was they would work in Menlo Park. They would work around the clock. I don't know if you know this. And he would give them any time they were tired, they would take a break. In the Orient, they are experimenting with chairs that turn into beds at workstations. And they encourage their people, whenever they're tired, hit the button, lay back, and sleep right there on the job. Like, what? You're sleeping on the job? Well, you're exhausted. And they found an increase in productivity. Make work wind down a priority every day. Figure out a routine, something to wind down and disconnect. One of the things that I've often, a little trick that I've often given people. So I moved across town. My house used to be closer to the church. Moved across. I'm clear across town now. And that's a good thing. 12 minutes from the church. On the way home, you get to this corner. I get to the corner, and I leave everything there at the corner. Turn the corner, and I think about my wife, what we're going to do this evening, my grandkids, my family. And you go home, I'm going home. Work's back here. Can't do anything about work. It's all done. In the morning, I get to the corner, I pick up all that crap, put it back on, and head in.
Don't you have an iPhone in your pocket and a laptop and a briefcase?
Mm-hmm, I do. But I don't do it at home. I don't. There are times, honestly, I have found peace in disconnecting from this stupid thing. I will put it beside my bed, plug it in, and I'm not always scrolling, checking things. I used to Facebook, whatever. What's going on? I quit watching Fox News most of the time. I enjoy Fox News. I enjoy the news. But every morning, it was stressing me out. And so about every 2 weeks, I'll check it and see they're still talking about the same stories. I'm like, oh, okay. And on and on. Yeah, nothing was done. There's still border crossings, just whatever. You know, I like the news. I'm a news junkie. But I found that it was causing me problems. Yeah.
When we went to the mission field, my dad said to me, decide what you can do, and then decide to leave the rest.
Yes.
Because you're never, ever going to do everything. And when I've made a conscious decision, I know this is what I can do. And it's not like this is chasing me like a storm coming after me. No, I decided I'm not doing that.
Yes.
And it really helps.
Yes, it does. Thank you for sharing that. I've seen pastors, and I won't mention, but I know one particular that I'm close to that they are just the sweetest servants, him and his wife, sweetest servants. They have a lot of widows in their church. And those widows have found out that they can call the pastor and his wife if all the toilets broke. I'm going to tell you something. One lady called my wife one time and asked her to give her an enema.
What?
Yes. Oh, we said no. No. I mean, seriously. You get asked to do some of the dumbest things. And I was like, no, we are not crossing that line. That is not what we're doing. We're not going to do that. And I'm not going to feel guilty about it.
I was a song leader. I was walking up the pulpit, and a guy came out the side door. I said, "Pastor, Pastor," I said, "what's up?" He said, "the toilet's overflowing in the boys' bathroom." I'm like, "Okay, well, we'll fix it."
Yeah, God showed it to you. Amen. Thank you for listening to the Lord. Wow, brother, what can I get you? Do you need some tools? I'll show you where they are. Right? Okay, fill your free time. Fill your free time with the right stuff. I'm going to tell you, you need to relax, but be careful what holes you go into. Remember, sin is an addiction. Any sin you get involved in will trap you. Careful. Lean into your support network. Do not be too proud to have a support network. You need a support network. Focus on the things in your control. We talked about just a minute ago. What can you control? Give me the grace to know the difference between what I can control and what I can't control, right? You can't control. You can control your actions. You can't control them. Okay. I was going to ask you to plan a scenario here. We are out of time. We can't really do this. Plan a debrief for a fireman who found two burnt children after a fire in a house he had tried to clear. This is real life experience. I'll just tell you this. I want you to think about it. You have the things. Go back on your own. Can I ask you on your own, do this? Kind of, okay, what would I do? How would I set the scenario? Happened just recently. Multiple fire departments. I had to debrief. They'd gone into the fire. Fireman climbed through the window in the back of the house. He went in as far as he could go. Too much smoke. And they didn't see anybody, didn't know anybody was there, didn't know where everybody was. His commander called him to get back out because he thought they were going to lose him if he was in too long. So he comes back out. And after they got the fire put out, they found the child about 2 feet from where he stopped. And the child was burned to death. And there was two children in there. That happened about a month ago. Can you understand that that's a very, very difficult situation? So you're going into that. Don't think about yourself. Think about them. And by doing that, remember, you're going to get transference. You guys are sitting there saying, oh, man, you're immediately feeling something, aren't you? Yeah. Now think about it. You're sitting there listening to the whole story. You're listening to everything. You're hearing the frantic feelings of the truck get stuck full of water on a backcountry road, and they couldn't get the da-da-da-da-da, and this didn't happen, and that didn't happen. And the first guy on the scene is a fireman who's in a cop car and doesn't have any stuff with him. So he doesn't even have a fire extinguisher. He's in his cop car, but he's a volunteer fireman. So he gets there. He knows what to do, but he has no tools. So he's frustrated. He's watching this fire burn. Mom and dad run out the front. Get our kids, get our kids, get our kids. And that's exactly what happened.